Then we're just going to give like a fresh analysis of the problem and starting from scratch. Try not to be biased. So we start fresh from scratch. Then vector backing, it's the field of study makes sense as a way to attack this problem. So we're going to go a little bit over vector backing. And then we're going to show some experiments that we did comparing SRC map to some vector backing approaches. Then we're going to have our discussion and show some future work directions. So energy proportional storage is the problem attacked by SRC map. These are pretty much the high level desired features. We want to have fine grained energy proportionality. Pretty much we want to use as least power as we can to service all the work that we need to service. Also, we need to, we're looking for low space overhead. I mean, in each one of the hosts or servers, we have limited resources pretty much, and we have to work with that. Reliability. So we want the system to keep all the data available. And these are the first five are the set of features that are outlined in the source map paper. Adaptability to workload changes, which is load is going to change, so we want the system to adapt to those changes. Heterogeneity support, we're going to have servers with different requirements, different size, different bandwidth, different power consumption rates. And the system should know about that. We want the system to be scalable, so that the number of our servers in the data center increases, we want it, the system to still perform well. And we want to achieve maybe some sort of proof, some good performance bounds or guarantees of the system so that we can predict how it's going to behave in different situations. Weaknesses that we saw in SRC map is one is the lack of theoretical foundations in the sense that we don't have a like worst case or average case guarantees of how well it's going to do. The system is very complex and difficult to analyze, but it was difficult to formalize like worst case examples, kind of try to push it to do the worst it could. It's very difficult to make the system create examples for it. Like for other problems that are very, well, for other algorithms that are, I guess, more tightly defined, it's easier to say, all right, this is the worst case that it could be. And SRC map is kind of complex, difficult to analyze in that sense. And of course, and so it's also difficult to formalize bad distributions, at least it was for us. Say, certain distributions of our loads and sizes will push SRC map to the limits. And also, we don't know how it scales up. Some experiments that we ran later with certain simplified version of the problem, it behaves different as it scales up in the number of servers. I mean, we ran some simulations with more servers, more than eight, and didn't exactly grow as intuitive as this. So it's kind of unpredictable. And also, another, talking back to about the complexity, there's it has certain parameters, like the probability function, it has certain weights and some other parameters, and it's difficult to pick system parameters. Like, the best parameters may depend on the case and the input. We don't exactly know which parameters are better for which inputs. And in some experiments, we saw that depending on the parameters and the input, some parameters would be better than others in certain different cases.
Just to clarify here, what is the metric you have in mind when you say that there are no worst case or average case approximation guarantees or performance is difficult to predict? So. These are all different metrics, I guess, because you say performance is difficult to predict. Do you mean I/O performance, or you just mean the correctness of the algorithm, or?
By performance, I mean approximations in power, approximation guarantees. For example, the optimal power, minimum power that we will need to service this amount of voltage peak, and the performance is how much power we use compared to what would be the optimal power.
Yeah, so performance is used in a different way.
Yeah, it's misleading here. We see performance as how well the system runs, how fast, how much amount of work it can perform over time. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, here it has to do more with approximation in terms of minimizing power. So starting fresh, starting the problem simplified from the beginning. This is demo. Pretty much where we have the assumption that we're given a whole bunch of disks. We have the assumption that we have already selected a working set, which is a pretty good prediction of what the data that's going to be accessed going to be in the next interval. So we have that assumption. We don't work on trying to optimize the best prediction of a working set. We start from this standpoint. So
you assume working set is well defined and static. So that's a basic assumption here.
Yeah, pretty much from the same approach as SRC map. It does a prediction of working sets, and then from there on, it does all this work. That's pretty much what we're saying here, that after we predict the working sets, then we worry about what we do later on with the working
sets. It doesn't have to be static. I guess it's possible that it changes, and the system should adapt to such changes.
Right. So although SRC map does assume that there is a defined working set, it does pay the penalty of making that assumption with the performance loss. Right. So that's also measured in that work.
Oh, yeah. So you have stability there. So what does it mean? Because you have a working set in terms of size and load, or then you also have stability.
We'll go over that right now. So first I want to go over the disks are defined, each one of the disks has a certain amount of assigned replica space to copy working sets from other disks or replicas. They have a certain limit bandwidth, and it has a parameter given power consumption rate, which might be simplified or not. Amount of in the experiments, as I will talk to you guys, you said it didn't matter the load that you gave to a server, pretty much, if it was active, it pretty much is the same amount of power over time. As if it has a high amount of intensive load.
That was true in the case of the disk drives that we used. But then there is other technology where it would be useful to have a parameter like this. For instance, solid state drives. They consume different amount of power than when they're being used and then they are not. And also smaller disk drives, they actually have a much wider power range than the larger disk drives.
Yeah, so in that case, like for example here, if you assume that power is going to be the same no matter load, then the function of power rate would be a constant.
Yeah.
But in those cases, obviously it's going to be a function, either a little bit more complex function, maybe more difficult to analyze, or maybe it can still be analyzed. Then the working sets, each one of them has a size amount of data it has, an expected average load during a certain interval, and the expected number of disks. And that's what I mean by stability. How stable is the working set? So you depend on this working set for all the services, for all the requests for that data, but what's your confidence that you're not going to need to go and actually direct service request from the actual primary data space.
Okay, so the load is not always distributed equally, right, among different pieces of data. Usually you have some exponential distribution. So I'm assuming that...
This is just to say that each working set is characterized
by those three parameters. Okay.
How they vary or how they are dependent on other things is not what is.
Okay.
Said it's just identifying what things you
okay.
have to specify in order to specify.
Sure. Yeah, but I just wanted to make sure that you have different working set units, right? So that you can model the behavior for particular hotspots or stuff like that.
Correct.
Right. So because if you have just a working set that just varies in size, you will not be able to model that. But if you have
here, it's a monolithic model of a working set. What you are saying is that there is actually a fine grained description. Okay, I understand.
And I think SRC map kind of deals with that a little bit by creating sub-replicas. You divide a working set into smaller
correct, pieces. Correct, correct, yeah. So you could sort of generalize to what Jorge is saying by doing exactly that here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you could make those into separate working sets.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So here, mostly we did not attack the problem of trying to use replicas. Of course, the replicas will allow you to do much better using the SLC map approach or the vector packing approach. Because I will see that vector packing does very well, has better performance in terms of approximation as the size of the items decreases. So here, for now, we're just looking at and this and working sets, but we do understand that if you take the working sets and you split them up into smaller pieces, you will get a better approximation for each one of those pieces. But we're starting from a simple problem here, and we can add more complexity to it as we go. And of course, well, the goal is to make power consumption proportional to need, and we want to minimize the power consumption and still be able to service all the amount of work.
So what I would recommend is that you formalize the need when you describe this by saying I/O load or I/O intensity or something that can be measured.
So you mean instead of power consumption?
No, instead of saying need, proportional to need.
Oh,
right?
Proportional to load.
Yeah,
I/O. So quickly going over the approach to SLC map, many of us are familiar with it. Just go quickly over. So SLC map divides time into a major and minor intervals. The major interval in the paper is described on in the experiments done with the 8 hours. At the beginning of the major interval, we perform the stage called replica allocation, where we take the working sets and we create replicas of it in different replica spaces of origins. And each major interval is composed of several minor intervals, which in the paper are given a length of 2 hours. At the beginning of each minor interval, we pretty much do the load allocation or activities identification phase, where we do not move any more replicas. We just set for each working set, we define an active copy for it.
So you have only one active replica, right?
Yeah.
At a given point
from,
in time.
Yes. One active replica. Nothing constrains you to say that you cannot have more than one active replica, but it may make the problem a little bit more complex. And, well, SLC map just has one active replica, as far as I remember.
Yes.
So simplified problem formulation starting from scratch. Suppose you're given only one interval, one single interval. Each major interval has one minor interval, and that's it. So it does replica allocation and active copy identification at the same time. So in the major interval, SLC map copies make more than one copy for each working set. Here, we wouldn't worry about that, because we're just going to attack one interval, and at the end of that interval, we do replica allocation again.
Okay. So I see. So you're changing the formulation of the problem from the SRC map earlier.
Yeah.
No,
this is just a step towards the general solution.
Yeah, from here we will go over to the multiple interval
classroom.
But just to formalize and get on the same page, everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Suppose it's a single interval and what the problem would be. You're given n working sets and items. And each one of those has the parameters described before, size, expected load, and the expected number of meters. And then we're also given servers, each one of them with the described parameters, size, capacity, load capacity or bandwidth, and the power consumption rate. Also, we must mention that BI, it already holds the data, the working set AI in its primary space. So we, of course, don't want to allocate that data in the replica space of the disk. So the constraints in this problem formulation is we want to allocate a copy of each working set in one of the hosts, so that in each one of the hosts where we allocate working sets, we don't want to go over the site capacity constraint or the load constraint. So this is the sum of the, the loads and the sum of the sizes of the working sets in this host should not go over the constraints.
So are, I'm trying to recollect, are these the only constraints that SRC map uses as well? Or did it had a third constraint, I need to remember what it was.
Oh.
There are two other major parameters, right? One is the misses and the other is the power. And it's not clear what sort of constraints they generate.
Mm-hmm.
One of them, power, is really going to become a, an objective function, whereas misses,
it's going to be part of the objective function as well.
Right, yeah, okay. So, were these the other two? The constraints we use?
I don't remember those too long, but I'm not sure.
Okay. Yeah, well, these make sense, of course. Now let's continue.
Yes, one question. So, you're saying that the size constraint basically that all the working sets are in a disk, right? But I think you had, I thought that you had a one-to-one association.
No.
No?
No. You were talking about the third bullet there?
Yes.
No.
Yeah, I'm talking about the working sets allocated in the replica space which host. Like the one-to-one relation is that you don't want to take, suppose the first host, you don't want to take its working set and put it in its replica space. It's already allocated in the primary space.
Okay, so yeah, you don't want to create a replica in the same space, okay?
Yeah. So
that's
here,
all the relation.
So here,
oh, okay.
In the size constraint, I'm just saying that the working sets that I put in the replica space, the addition of the sizes, of course, they cannot go over the size capacity of the replica space.
Okay, so you can have any working set in any disk, in any amount of disk. So you have at least one.
You can have any working set in any disk except itself, which is already allocated there.
Okay.
And it's possible that a working set is not replicated at all.
Okay, so exactly. So you have at least one occurring, a working set occurring at least one in one disk, which is.
Which is primary.
It's primary.
Yeah.
The replica space is an allocated space in each disk. Now, each disk also has a bandwidth. You don't have like a replica space bandwidth and bandwidth for primary space, just bandwidth. And we say that if you have an active, a disk is active, you will not go ahead and service the request for the working set pertaining to that disk from another disk. And you have.
Why do you reserve the load for the working set in the load constraint, but you don't reserve the size of the working set in the size constraint?
And that's what I was going to go over. The working set is not allocated in the replica space. So that's why I don't talk about it in the size constraint.
So the size capacity is just the size in the replica
space that you have for the other working set.
But the load capacity is the load of the complete host.
So the load capacity is the load of the complete host, which if it's active, it's going to service the load for its own working set.
That's actually an assumption you need to write down at some point, saying that if the original host is up, is powered up, then that's always the default active copy,
yeah.
Because that need not be so. If somehow that
right.
That disk is busy or has too many other things, maybe you can use it as a host.
Mm-hmm.
Technically.
Yeah. Yeah. We talked about that assumption, but we didn't formalize it in the papers, and that's where
the last
right constraint. That's why the load capacity of the disk is whatever its load bandwidth is minus the expected load of its original working set. So in this single interval formulation, we have three different varieties or variations of it. One is the simplest one, in which the power consumption rate of each disk is the same, and we expect no misses. Then of course, what we want to do is just minimize the number of disks that we need to locate all these working sets.
Mm-hmm.
They all spend the same amount of power staying active. So in this single interval, we're just allocating one copy of this working set. So we just try to find a minimum number of codes that can hold this amount of working sets. A slightly more complicated version of it is the powers change, in which the powers are scaled down to from 0 to 1. And we just, then we just assign a weight to each host. And what we want to do is minimize the dilution of the weights of the active hosts. Well, we do have a miss ratio, and that's where the miss, number of misses becomes part of the objective function that we're trying to minimize. Is that you have the power of all the hosts that you decide to keep active, plus the amount of energy or power that you're going to spend from the number of misses. So for each one of the, it's a way to formalize it in math terms, for each one of the hosts that you're going to keep deactivated, you have an expected number of misses which you add, and then you could say you have a parameter as a spin-up cost, which should be a factor. Like many misses could be right next to each other. And when you have a miss for the first time, you go and spin up that disk, and you might have some misses right after that, since the disk is already spinning up in good service. So that number of misses and spin-up cost will have a certain factor of an expected number of misses that will be serviced while you spin up the disk.
Hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. I think in the SRC map, can you go back to the previous slide? There, in that work also, we used a single load term, right? And we used that, the load as IOPS or bandwidth, or what do you remember?
No, I don't.
You're talking about the probability?
No, the load.
Load itself, how we
model
the load.
I thought it was the
constant. Problem.
The metric was IO operations per second.
IO operations per second, okay. So that's what we are. Okay. Yeah, I think that's good enough. Because some of the recent work we've been doing, we sort of realized that's IOPS is sort of a coarse grained indicator of load.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes when you have sequential load, the IOPS is not a good indicator. But I guess for now, abstracting away into some load metric is good enough.
Yeah.
We could
for us abstracting it like this, we don't. I guess from this point of abstraction, it doesn't really matter how you measure load.
Exactly. Yeah.
Any measure of load.
Yeah.
So you're saying IOPS is a better measure than
no. IOPS
is worse.
It's worse. I mean,
so
what you have here is good because this is a more abstract concept, right?
Yeah.
And this could be translated into IOPS.
It's a function of
IOPS. Or a function of IOPS.
Yeah, a function of something.
Yeah.
Or what you think.
Right. But in the SRC map work, we just used IOPS, so this is better.
And so we go one step up and attack the multiple intervals problem. So we saw the single interval, now we say, well, we have major interval with multiple minor intervals. In the major interval, we assume that the size of the working set will not change. As in SRC map, you create this expected amount of data that we're going to use, and this is what we're going to work with for the next 8 hours. The number of misses, at least in the SRC map paper, is also kept constant during the major interval, so we're also going to assume it stays constant in this problem formulation. The average load is something that's going to change a little bit more often, and so it stays constant only in the minor intervals. Different in each one of the minor intervals. And the server power consumption rate is going to stay constant the whole time. And we wouldn't expect that to change. I mean, it could change depending on.
Those are your assumptions for this problem?
Mm-hmm. Those are the assumptions for this problem formulation. So there are two approaches that we explored of attacking this problem.
Mm-hmm.
Solution A, which is more similar to a SRC map. And solution B, which is a little bit more different than the first map. And we'll see why. So solution A, approach A, is load redirect. Which the description is at the start of the major interval, it places working shapes, rapid graphs, and poles, just as our CMAP does. And at the start of the minor intervals, it addresses the violation in loads, because something that might have been serviced from some active copy before might not work anymore. So that's pretty much the way a SRC map works. The upside of that is that you don't need to move data between minor intervals. Moving data is something that takes time and energy, so you don't want to do it as often. And that's, I suppose, one of the main reasons why we move data at the beginning of major intervals in a SRC map. And then in the 2-hour intervals, we don't move data, we just do active disidentification.
So, and since some of the folks here may not be familiar with the SRC map, when you say load is redistributed by changing active copy of some working sets, so what you're saying is that
load of the disks is redistributed.
Right, load of the disks is redistributed, and the active copy of each working set is what absorbs all the I/O requests to that working set. And by changing the active copy, you can change which disk absorbs all the I/O requests of various working sets. And that allows you the flexibility to redistribute load.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, since load is associated both with working set and with disks, you really need to say load of disks is redistributed.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Well, the upside, we talked about it. The downside of it is that, well, when you need to
So one question. So when you change the active replica from one location to another, don't you have to incur in some cost of
synchronization.
Exactly.
Yeah, so there is a replica synchronization stage at the beginning of each minor interval that will allow you to shift from one active replica to another copy.
Okay. So is that taken into account in the model?
No, because it's a cost that you have to... It's a different... big problem.
Right. One of the things that we do talk about in SRC map is to how to optimize that process of replica synchronization.
Mm-hmm.
There is one thing we do is do it in the background, and the second is what these guys did in storage vMotion, right? Which is, we read that paper at some point during the summer. Instead of, so when you have new writes to blocks that have not been synchronized, you just send it to the new place and invalidate the old one. You don't need to write those anymore. So there are some optimizations we did to ensure that replica synchronization does not interfere too much with the foreground activity.
So yeah, we don't work on the replica synchronization. It's a big problem to find.
So, but you're doing this while you're still trying to minimize the subset S, right? The size of the subset S.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Or depending on the parameter, if power varies, we're minimizing the sum of the powers of the atom.
Well, yeah, but your objective is to satisfy those constraints while minimizing the
I think this is sort of a global view. This is simply saying here is a general approach. Now he's going to say that really there are two separate optimization problems.
Okay.
One at the start of a major interval, one at the start of every minor interval.
Mm-hmm.
And both of these problems are very different. They need slightly different approaches, slightly different actual algorithms to solve them. And
okay.
Both need to be formulated slightly differently, and that will come up at some point.
So, well, the downside of this approach is that, well, we have allocated working sets in different locations, and that's a constraint that we have when we're trying to find active copies for it. So load might change a lot, but you're already, you bought this, so you have to relive it. So the other approach, this one allows a certain amount of replica reallocation in the minor intervals. You don't want to probably to reallocate all the replicas, because that could probably take too much time and energy. But maybe there's an approach that could allow moving certain small amounts of data, and that maybe could help find more optimal solutions. The upside of that is the flexibility that it gives you, and the downside is the power and time constraints, cost, power cost and time constraints of such operation. So we did not do much. We did not do a lot of work in this approach. We kind of stick to approach A, which is definitely easier to analyze than approach B. So after doing a certain amount of research in this problem, vector packing makes sense. There is a certain amount of work in the industry in virtual machine resource allocation that also uses vector packing. So we decided to do a lot of work on vector packing as a problem and try to learn from it and see how we could use it to tackle this problem. So just a quick introduction to vector packing. The input is you're given a disk with n d-dimensional vectors, and assume that each one of the coordinates between 0 and 1. And what you want to do as an output is output a packing of the vectors, such that the sum of the components in each one of the coordinates does not exceed the capacity of the wings.
And the goal is to maximize the number of vectors you pack?
No. So minimize the number of pins.
Minimize the number of pins.
Mm-hmm. There's a speech. The bin will use power.
So yeah, each bin on this sense, and in the consolidation column we will look at it as a service. Yeah, so you're given a whole bunch of vectors, suppose these are like two-dimensional vectors. And you try to pack them, like the first one, and so on. And then they don't fit anymore, so you have to open one more bin. And then fill this over to the vectors.
Do you have a bin in each dimension?
Each bin has a...
So imagine that you're just packing boxes.
Yeah.
Right? So you want to minimize the number of boxes that you pack. So each item, in this case, well, could be, let's say...
Each item is a vector.
Exactly. Each item is a vector that occupies n dimensions.
X and Y dimensions.
Right.
And, and you're not. It's not really the a box packing problem. It's really a little bit more. So that's why it's called a vector packing. Mm-hmm. Because you can't stack one box on top of the other. Mm-hmm. So it's... just abstractly, the vector packing simply says, I want to... I'm allowed a box where I can pack a certain number of vectors, and the sum of the vectors cannot exceed the size of the box.
Right, so when you say sum, you're
it's
summing across each dimension.
Vector sum.
Yes.
So vector sum.
You're not summing separately across each dimension?
I am.
Yeah.
You are.
So vector sum is, if you're summing vector A and vector B, you would add up the x coordinates, dimensional vector.
Where is the restriction of the beams from the input to the algorithm?
I guess the constraint is missing here, and that maybe it's in the next slide.
The constraint is that the bins are all up to
that's the constraint. That's the constraint, that BI has to be smaller than 1, right? Yeah. That each dimension of the vector has to be smaller than 1. Then what you're saying is what your optimization goal is.
Yeah.
Right? So you want to minimize the number of bins that you
want. The abstract
size of the bin then.
No, the abstract bin vector packing problem assumes that the size of the bin is 1.
Oh, okay.
So that's why you're
okay.
And also the values of each vector is less than 1.
Correct. Each component is less than 1.
Yeah, so that was the missing information.
Yeah.
Okay. Bins are of size 1.
Yeah, after doing so much reading on vector packing, you're interested.
So
we're just adding vectors, you add enough vectors, you go to the spectrum, and then
X and Y in that case is 1 each.
Right.
And you must pack all the vectors in.
Right. So you pack all the vectors.
And you use as many bins as you need. As few bins as possible.
So each bin will be a cost, and each dimension will be a metric.
Like size and load in the future.
Yeah.
It's like a generalization of bin packing.
Yeah.
Wrong.
Correct.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what.
If you look at each dimension,
well,
it's a bin packing.
If you generalize bin packing, then it's like packing a FedEx truck. That's a little bit different from vector packing because in packing a truck, you can put one box on top of the other. Here, you cannot.
If
here, you're adding all dimensions. Does that make sense?
You mean you can put one small box on top of a big box?
Correct. Here you cannot. You have to sort of.
I understand.
Yeah.
Okay.
And also this,
I mean, you put it on top, but also on the side at the same time.
Exactly.
Right. This is non-fractional, right? You cannot split an item and say, okay, we'll put this much in this.
Well, you can make it fractional if you guys allow this sub-replica.
Okay.
Yeah, but what
so that would make the problem more complex. But right now, let's just go.
Wouldn't it make it easier?
The best version.
It makes it definitely much easier. You have to put a constraint on how much
it makes easier if you don't care where you break it. But if you have constraints on where you break it, then it will be much
faster. Oh, okay. Suppose you have like a pack of sand you can just put it into the shop and put it in the next.
Right. Then it's fine, yeah.
So, if you split the replicas into smaller things, then you say that each one of those smaller things is a vector, and then...
By the way, it's not necessarily easy because your sub-replicas have their own x and y coordinates, x and y dimensions. So you're constrained by what comes from them. If you can cut it in both along x and y independently, then you're fine. Then it's very, very easy.
Of course.
But you can't.
Yes, you're right.
And the moment you take one piece, you're stuck with whatever the corresponding load is for that piece.
Yeah,
you don't have control over the y axis.
Yes.
So it's not necessary. It's probably much harder.
Yes.
Yeah. You don't split a vector into two smaller vectors entirely.
Yeah.
They might be smaller in one component.
Yeah, you can't just chop along the vertical direction and say,
Yeah, when we were analyzing the problem of creating sub-replicas, we saw this challenge, but you don't exactly cut a sub-replica and make it open. So, this one, the vector packing problem in the literature is more difficult than the box packing problem. It's a lot of work. It's extending a lot of work.
So one more question. You mentioned that this is done in industry. Where do you find that information?
Well, there's a paper from Microsoft.
I've seen it before. And it has certain references to other work done in the industry as well using vector packing.
What conference is it?
They actually take algorithms.
Okay. But I'm interested in the paper, so...
Of course, no.
Yeah, I'll send you the link. Yeah.
Okay.
In the paper, they analyze a similar problem, but instead of talking about working sets, they talk about files, and the files would be the items that you're trying to pack into your service instead of working sets.
Okay.
What are they packing? Sorry.
Files. Instead of the expected amount of data, they would take the working set and just divide it into files, and then expect that goal for this file. And they look also CPU constraints.
So they have a bunch of dimensions.
Yeah, and they do research in more dimensions than in the two dimensions. So we've been introduced to the vector packing problem. So then we're going to go over how the SRC map problem is similar to the problem described by vector packing. Single interval model. Remember, this is where a minor and major interval.
You don't mean SRC map. You mean storage virtualization.
Storage virtualization.
By the way, this is empty hard, right?
Yes.
Yes, they're all hard. Yeah.
No, I have a small host.
Well, it's hard just for bin packing, the one dimension. So we should expect higher dimensions.
But the thing is that we are not talking about too many items and too many dimensions.
I know. So those are things we can talk about for sure. So perhaps we can discuss that what you mean.
Yeah, it can be hard, but there is a lot of work in approximation algorithms that do very well.
No, what I'm saying is slightly different. Is that although it may be NP hard, if the problem extent is small, then you can get a correct solution with at low cost.
But then we also have to take into account how it scales up. when the number of services that we try to work with
right.
then it's not that easy to find enough.
Right.
Yeah, it'll work for the department, but it won't work for Google, for instance. It won't work for 100 servers.
So we have to be careful about defining the scale at which this problem becomes NP-hard.
It will get hard even at 20, for instance. It'll get pretty intractable by 10 or 20.
At VMware, they wanted to support 10,000 VMs.
I would imagine you're going to need to scale up at some point.
So, you can think of each of these workloads like a VM data.
Sure.
Okay. Yeah.
Maybe in a world we're talking big problems. Going to the single interval description of the problem back we've seen before. So the size capacity is 1 for each server, and it has a bandwidth of 1 when we take into consideration the primary copy of the disk, and that's seen clearly in the loop on the page there. We assume that each disk has the same amount of power rate consumption, and not misses. Then in this case, we have almost classic vector packing problem with 2 dimensions, where the working sets are the vectors with a size and load, and the hosts or beams have a size capacity and load capacity. But in this case, it's equal to 1, so it's the vector packing with a box of
capacity. I have one more question. Now that you mentioned here that there are 2 beams with different size and load, is that right?
No, 2 dimensions.
In the problem formulation, you're assuming that the beams are the same, are all the same. I mean, all the
sources are the same. In this problem formulation.
Okay.
First question.
I see. Yeah, because all of them is of size 1, right? So, okay.
Yeah, no, he's just going to present several versions of the problem.
I see. Okay.
Slowly it'll become more and more complex and more and more.
So here each disk has the same amount of bandwidth, the same amount of graphical space allocated.
So the simplest version is your classic 2-dimensional vector packing problem. That's all you can do.
Where you will be able to get better approximation boundaries. The more difficult you make it, the less guarantees you have in the math controls you. This is the worst you can be. So here we have an avoided 2-dimensional vector packing problem. This pretty much minimize the number of pins or servers or hosts that you use to service all the amount of work. And the additional constraint is the one we've mentioned before, that you wouldn't put working set A sub I in the server B sub I that has it already allocated in its primary space. So then let's say we change the power, then we have a well-defined weighted vector beam packing problem. What you could do is pretty much sort the beams by weight and then do a normal vector packing, trying to minimize the number of beams.
But you start putting larger vectors in first.
You
order the bins, right? Because some bins are more costly to use and others are cheaper to use because they use less power, right? And so you just order them in that order. And then when you're doing bin packing, use the ones that are more efficient.
Because they have the same size and load capacity.
No, but what I was thinking is that even what you... Oh, because all the items that you put in are of the same weight.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
So when you go on to...
The items are not of the same weight. The items are still the same items. But the bins are all the same size. The only thing that's different is their power consumption rate.
Right. So what you would put the larger items in first.
Whatever bin packing algorithm you want to use it, but start by choosing the less expensive bins.
Yeah, of course.
Start by using the less expensive disks.
What is weighted are the bins. Mm-hmm. The items have no weight. They just have size and load parameters.
Okay. So with that, we are eliminating the need to include the power in the items.
Exactly.
For instance, if
your solution says you need 10 bins, just use the top 10 bins, the ones that have the best
power consumption rates.
Power efficiency. Mm-hmm. That's all. So all it says is that power consumption is not a huge problem if things are still simple enough like this. Mm-hmm.
And remember here, we're not considering that we have any misses at all.
Yeah. Okay. So we've made the problem has been made a little bit more complex because now power is included, yet it's still pretty much the same as the previous version.
Then we can change and say that we don't allocate the same amount of public space in the server, and the server doesn't have the same bandwidth. And then we have to also will define calling in the literature of a weighted different size being a vector packet, and different size being a vector packet, which is more difficult than this one, which is more difficult than this one. I mean, these two are pretty easy, but this one gets a little bit more complicated.
Yeah, well, you change two things.
Like all the constraints, so the boxes now are not one by one, they are just multi-dimensional squares.
Well, I guess there's still one more level where you can add some misses there.
Yeah, so then we don't have misses, and then for each pin, you have to...
So, sorry, before you go there, so do you have an algorithm for that one?
There are approximation algorithms for it in the literature.
Approximation?
Yeah, all vector packing and everything is approximation algorithms. It's simply hard. But luckily, it's approximable. So of course, the approximation algorithms for these problems are going to be less close to optimal than this problem. So if we do allow misses, then for each spin, you have to take into account the amount of power you need to keep it active, which is an interval of time, and the amount of power it will require given the expected number of misses and the spin-up cost. And with those parameters, you can keep the bin a new weight, and then you pretty much have a weighted different size bin packing still.
Right. Yeah, this is quite interesting. I mean, if you change the power, the sizes will change. I mean, most likely, because when you have devices with different power consumption, it is very likely that the device themselves are very different in terms of capacity, right? So which means that the amount of replica space that you can afford on each of those devices is different, right? So when you change power, you very likely are going to change the sizes too. And that, so what I'm saying in other words is that the last version of the problem is not
more real.
Is very real.
Mm-hmm.
It's fairly real. Because
this version or the previous version?
The last version where you change the sizes.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. The sizes are different, power is different, and misses are different. So it is closer to reality.
Closer to reality, yeah. It is closest to reality.
But following what Ray said, when you order your bins by power, you also need to take account how much size do they have.
The
simplistic idea of just sorting by power is not going to work if sizes are also different. That's correct. Then I don't know. Is there an algorithm that deals even with this case? I'm not really sure.
We haven't done much work in the more complex.
Yeah.
We've been trying to do the best that we can in the simple versions and move up to the more complex versions. In this version, that's very complex compared to the unweighted vector packing.
Well, but it should be something like min-max, right? Isn't it it's not linear. It could be, right? Isn't it an LPM?
ILP.
I said it in Spanish.
Well, interior linear programs, it takes a lot of...
Yeah, I mean, obviously, they're LP, but I mean, the solution could be formulated as an...
Of course,
there is a lot of work.
That's the whole point of these formulations. I think they're all completely LP. So the way this is defined, these are linear constraints, and everything can be written down as a as an integer linear program. However, anything more than 20 items is going to be your ILP is going to die.
What they do in the literature is they use linear programming, but as a way to approximate. Like, this type of problems, you can pretty much forget about finding out.
Yeah, that's what I was saying, min-max, right? That you have, you put some bound in your approximation.
Yes. There are at least three, maybe four different kinds of devices that are relevant today, in today's, industry, storage industry, right? One is the FAT disk drives, which are 3.5 inch, the high capacity. also high power, but also they are cheap, right? So lots of space. And then you have the smaller disk drives, which are lower power consuming, but also lower density, sorry, lower capacity, right? And then you have SSDs now.
So there's another category, the fast.
Right, so there, oh yeah, there are
fast. Two variants for those two.
For the first two, there are two different variants. One is the faster disk, and the other is the slower ones. Right, so even in terms of that is the performance are different. Sizes are different. Power is different.
So this is actually interesting because if we can somehow correlate the two, saying that as size increases, power has to go down, let's say, if we can make that assumption, just for the sake of argument.
Okay, what's the other way around, right? The more power, the more size you have?
Well, that's what I mean.
That's for disk drives, though. I mean, that's for disk drives. But also, I don't know, do SAS drives consume more power than SATA?
Yeah.
So those are
they're spinning faster, right?
Yeah. So they are. So there are drives which are small, which are low capacity, but they spin faster, so they consume more power. So you have both trends in the same technology. If you increase the form factor, the power consumption increases. But if you change the technology, that is, change the RPM, then the power consumption does not follow the same trend. And then there are SSDs also, which are becoming more and more mainstream, with very different kind of power characteristics, size, everything is different, right? So if you bring all these devices into the mix, the last version of the problem you're talking about is the most real.
Mm-hmm. I think also we shouldn't forget about the array systems. Right?
What?
Array
systems. Yeah. In some sense, all of these, when we talk about a single device, we are most likely talking about an array itself. Composed of
they're all homogeneous in some
yeah homogeneous devices, but a bunch of them that store some working set.
So if it's homogeneous, then you can pretty much assume that they're all of the same size.
Within a single array, but across multiple arrays, you're copying.
I'm saying that both versions are of use, are useful in the sense. Quite often, you're going to have homogeneous systems.
I think the current state is that most systems are homogeneous, but the trend is to go towards heterogeneous.
Yeah, so that's why these formulations are designed to accommodate all those aspects. However, what I'm sort of looking for is some information on additional constraints. So, for instance, if you can say that As the capacity increases, the power consumption rate also, say, goes down, then something like that could be useful. Could add further constraints over here and could simplify some of the algorithms over here.
If you use the same technology, then something like that could be done. But nowadays, the trend is more towards using very different kinds of technologies within the same storage system.
But even there, I mean, ultimately, if you're paying more, you should be getting more too, right? I mean, if you're spending more power, there should be other advantages. Otherwise, there's no reason to
you get better performance. You get better performance. And if performance doesn't figure in any other...
Well, it figures on the load. You will have an increase in your load capacity. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah, there are certain constraints that could be added here, but those are not generic across all kinds of storage technologies.
No, I think the most interesting one you guys mentioned that could be added is the spin rate. Looks like you could algorithmically or programmatically vary the spin rate in order to change the...
Oh, the problem is that you can't do it within a single disk. So there are some disks which spin faster and other, but they spin at exactly that
point. But you
change this? I thought you could, no?
No, you have sleep modes, different sleep modes.
You could make those idle, go to sleep, then they're not accessible.
Exactly.
But you can't have disks spinning at different rates at different times.
Okay, good.
Yeah, so what that varies is the spin up time. Right, so you can go through, you have like different, it's like CPU that has different levels of
But still, you're saying that there are only two states, either this full spin up or
standby, or the other third state is power off, which means
there are three states.
No, I think there are more, because, I mean, there even when you're spinning, there's at least two modes, right?
So
one
where
the head is it's somewhere, mm-hmm. and one, another is when the head is not touching the disc, the platter,
yeah.
it's part. So it has less friction, so you have less power there. You use less power.
Still a single interval model, right?
Yeah. So in the multiple interval case, using bin packing, we can either just at the beginning of the major interval take into account size and load and do two-dimensional vector bin packing, apply two-dimensional vector bin packing solutions over it, or just worry about the size and do one-dimensional vector packing. And then in the minor interval, you worry about the loads. How would you use two-dimensional vector packing? Maybe because you have the assumption that loads might not vary that much, but if you think they are going to vary a lot, then you can just use one-dimensional vector packing. And then in each one of the minor intervals, do one-dimensional vector packing with load, or maybe just try two-dimensional vector packing with all the parameters. And we're going to compare a certain to these approaches, but let's just go quickly over some bin packing algorithms. One-dimensional vector bin packing, as we mentioned, if the bins are weighted, then we can sort them by weight. We have first fit, that's a 1.7 approximation guarantee, worst case scenario. Best fit, which has the same performance. We have half-harmonic algorithms, 1.69, and it was refined to something better, and then it was even more refined to harmonic C++. Harmonic plus plus. And that's actually a pretty good approximation guarantee for online algorithms, 1.58. Then we can use some randomized algorithms, like best fit, which randomizes the order, it's a random permutation of the order of the vectors, and then applies a classic bin packing, best fit, and the expected approximation is 1.5. And then we have the offline algorithms, which of course are expected to be better, so you can see all the items, like first fit decreasing, best fit decreasing, source the item decreasing in size, and then applies first fit and best fit.
So I guess it needs to be said that in this case, it is offline,
yeah.
Your problem is offline.
The problem is offline. However, we'll see later that in experiments, the online algorithms did very well anyways.
But aren't they have worse bounds anyway? So why would you use an online algorithm if you could use an offline algorithm?
Is there simpler?
Oh.
You just need to sort the filming.
Yeah. I mean, if you have a tie, you could use an offline algorithm. But we wanted to run them in an experiment to.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I'm glad you ran these, but I'm saying that someone might ask why online when the bounds are worse if you go online. So we need to have an answer for that.
And remember that the problem that we were attacking, as you know, attacks is slightly different from bin packing. So we definitely wanted to test these sort of algorithms and see how it would do. And also we wanted to mention that the worst case ratio, all these worst case ratios, improve as a maximum size of the items decreases.
So what does that mean?
If
best parameters. Right.
Yeah, like if the working sets are smaller, the smaller the working sets get, the better the approximation.
Yeah, if all the items are less than 10% of the replica sets, then we can pack pretty well. The amount of wastage will be not less. It's going to be at most 10%.
So what you're saying in other words is that those worst case ratios have a maximum size assumption built into them?
Not this.
Oh, this is completely unrestricted.
Yeah.
No,
you can do better ratios if you can assume the size of the
okay.
item.
Yeah,
so if you know, for instance, in your application okay. you have smaller items, then you can do
it. You can give a better guarantee than the ones
okay.
here. Then two-dimensional vector packing, we have online algorithms like first fit, two dimensions, which really all these quantities per speed. As this approximation guarantee as a number of dimensions increases for 2 is 3.7. So you can see it's 1.7 compared to 3.7, and as soon as you add one more dimension, the problem goes harder. And then we have some best fit algorithms for two-dimensional vector packing, what does it mean to do best fit with two dimensions. And there are several flavors of it, which are being studied. Like for example, this one, find the beam that maximizes the smallest coordinate.
Can you say what best fit means in one dimension first?
So best fit in one dimension is you want to put an item in the... So you take all the beams where the item would fit, and then take the one with the smallest gap or the one with the highest amount of weight of items stored.
And you can fill it up to the most, right?
The one you can fill it up to the most or minimize the gap, and the gap would be the gap between the ceiling and the space that you've used to allocate.
That items. Makes sense for one dimension, but for two dimensions, it's not clear how you define a best.
So different ways in which you can define best fit would be the one I was mentioning, maximize the smallest coordinate for each spin, or maximize the sum of all the coordinates, or if you have two dimensions, maybe maximize the ratio of the smallest dimension divided by the largest dimension in each spin. And then we have the applied algorithms.
Maximize or minimize?
I said maximize the ratio of the smallest to the largest, it's the same as minimizing the largest. Yeah, when we talked about it, we talked the other way around as well. So first thing, decreasing by dimension, it's called FFT sub T. There, which you take all the items with a larger X and Y, and you do first decreasing and sorting them by the order of the largest dimension. Which in one set would be the X dimension and the other set would be the Y dimension. And then you do first fit, which goes to steps. And that's approximation guarantee, 2.44 for two dimensions. Then we have generalized first fit decreasing, which takes all the items, takes the largest coordinate, and it sorts them by the largest coordinate. And then does first fit. Okay. And the approximation guarantee is slightly better, 2.33 for two dimensions. We have the hedging algorithm, which for items with components under 1/2, it has a guarantee of 2, much better than 2.3.
What does that mean?
For items with components under?
That size of
all
items.
All the dimensions are less than 1/2.
For the components?
In each component.
Okay.
This is the unit square.
This algorithm has a better worst case guarantee than these four algorithms for items that are under 1/2. However, on average, it doesn't. The other algorithms do better. And the reason is that this algorithm is made specifically to prove a better worst case guarantee, and it's more important theoretically than in practice. But we'll compare it to your algorithms. I mean, we didn't know. When we ran it with our algorithms, it didn't do as well. First fit decreasing by some. This algorithm is explored in the paper of the Microsoft guys on virtual machine resource allocation. They don't have, the algorithm doesn't have worst case guarantees yet. There's a lot of work on it. But on average, it does a 1.12 average approximation performance to the optimum.
Even if it hasn't been improved, I think D times 2 should be pretty straightforward, isn't it?
It should be. However, I didn't have a lot of time to work on the math, so I can vouch for you. But it should.
I mean, the worst should be the same 2.24.
Much worse than this. It probably should do better than this one, in guarantees.
What was the last?
This one?
No, the last.
This one?
Yeah.
It sorts all the items in decreasing order of the sum of all the coordinates, and then the first fit. This one is generalized by fit decreasing, which sort all the items by the size of the largest component, and then can apply each one of these specific approximation and algorithms. BFP sum, which is like this one, sorts the item by decreasing order of the sum of all the coordinates, and then can apply one of those specific.
What do you mean by the largest component? The largest of each sheet?
The
largest of all.
Here, we do not to sort on the vectors by this one.
So for every vector, you look at x, y, and whatever.
And you pick for each one of the largest.
So, alright, so we went to some experiments. We compared the two-dimensional vector Python algorithms, and then we compared them to SRC mapping. I mean, we have to SRC map with Python, kind of modify them a little bit to address additional constraints given in SRC map, in the problem attacked by SRC map.
Did you do this for the minor or the major intervals?
Yeah. So the experiments that we ran were in taking like using minor and major intervals.
And for the major, the layouts with for both your different candidates as well as SRC map were the same? So the replicas were in the same locations for both, or?
Oh, each one of them imply a different flavor of its replica location.
Oh, so you did something for the major interval as well, as and the minor interval.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So you did both at the same time.
So these algorithms in the major interval with allocated replicas is one of these solving either two-dimensional vector Python or one-dimensional vector Python. And then in the minor interval with allocated loads, given its allocation of replicas at the beginning of the major interval, is either one-dimensional vector Python or two-dimensional vector Python algorithms.
Right. And the reason I'm asking is because it would be good to know what actually helped more, or which one helped and maybe the other one didn't, right? So if you use the same allocation for both algorithms, SRC map and any of these candidates, and only make changes in the minor interval.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Well, we make changes in the major interval.
As well?
Yes.
So what I'm saying is that it would be good to understand which helps more, whether it is changes in the major or the minor.
Wow. However, to apply SRC map, you need them to be sorted. You need some constraints, so they have to be sorted by some probabilities. So the preconditions may not be satisfied.
So maybe what you could do is to use the SRC map layout for the major interval
and apply this for minor.
And apply these alternatives for the minor.
Okay.
Right.
We can try that.
However, the minor interval, it's not exactly a full-scale version of the two-dimensional vector packing because it's only applied to the ones, to the bins where the load has been violated, load constraint has been violated. So if some of these, suddenly the load went up so much that it can't handle that load anymore, only those items are repacked. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like a full-scale version of the vector packing.
Although we don't do reallocation of working sets.
We don't do reallocation, but re-identification of the active item. Right? But it's done using only those that have gotten violated. It's not like you apply it on all the items.
Although you do have the flexibility to change active replicas all over, entirely. Ideally you shouldn't be doing it because there's a lot more replica synchronization if you move replicas around for no reason. But you do have that flexibility if you want it. If you can show that, okay, if you allow full flexibility in choice of active replicas in the next minor interval, then you can actually have substantially better performance than if you were constrained only with respect to those that violated the constraints.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So your point is to sort of isolate what
helps. Although in the experiments, and we predicted before the experiments, that SRC map in the replica location phase could have issues with the starvation of working sets, which with the parameters you can of course make it impossible for working sets to be starvated when you have allocated them in the replica spaces. As in the code, you cannot do it. I tried to create an example like that, and the parameters are given in such a way that no working set will be starvated. But there is no actual something written down how to avoid those cases. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, if you have something written down, we could actually send it to Akshat and get his feedback, because he's the guy who actually thought of the original algorithm,
mm-hmm.
and has a lot more insights into why it works or where the drawbacks are and things like that than any of us.
He has a lot written down, but it's not in any coherent form that you can understand. He's just written down his notes saying, okay, I've tackled this question or that question. So I'm not sure it's ready to go to Akshat, but maybe in a short bit it could be.
Although we try even in theory to create an example in which starvation would show up,
mm.
but it was difficult. And going back to the complexity of the algorithm, this formulation of a probability function that gets recalibrated after each graphic allocation.
Mm.
It's very complex to create an example like that, even theoretically, not only in practice. So, first I ran all these algorithms, the vector packing algorithms. These are the distributions that I used. This is from, with all the coordinates could have values from 0 to 1, or from 0 to 1 half, or from 0 to 1 third, 1 fourth, 1 tenth, 1 20. So the offline algorithms are right there. And they did pretty well compared to online algorithms, as you would expect. The hedging algorithm, which is this purple one, is the one that has the two dimensions.
Best guarantee and it performs.
Has the best worst
best
case guarantee.
Best average case guarantee.
Worst case guarantee.
And it does the worst in the average case.
Yeah. That algorithm was presented in an operations research paper,
mm-hmm.
as a solution for a practical problem. But these algorithms don't have the same worst case guarantee. It did better in.
But it's improving.
Everybody improves.
The hedging.
But
at the end, it's.
Oh, the thing is that
the worst.
The hedging algorithm, I'm sorry, I should have mentioned this difference. It doesn't have a true approximation guarantee for. It has this approximation guarantee of, let's say, rho over 1 minus rho plus a constant in P1. And this is the size, the maximum allowed size of the item. So as it decreases, this number increases,
okay.
and the approximation becomes better. And I thought it would be relevant.
So 1/2 is the best case.
No, sorry, the worst case. And I thought it would be relevant to mention only the 1/2, because maybe it's closer to real life, or 1/3.
And that's why you don't have the purple bar in number 1.
Right.
Because
then approximation is kind of...
Yeah.
So, one question. In this case, there are small differences between all the results. So I was wondering how significant is to have a difference.
That's a good question. Yeah. So you should look at standard deviations. Here you just did the average
mm-hmm.
performance.
Mm-hmm.
So if you draw the standard deviation bars, you will know whether the difference is significant.
Yeah. Yeah, we definitely talked about that. I didn't put it in the presentation. But yeah, it's very important to know how much is expected to vary.
First of all, I mean, I would recommend that you change your y-axis range so that you can see the differences better, and then if you see that okay, one of those bars are at 1 and the other guy is at 1.3, it's a 30% difference.
Yeah.
30% difference
yeah,
in power consumption
one
can be a huge thing,
yeah.
right? So it's just the way you're visualizing this seems to indicate that there is not a whole lot of difference.
Yeah.
Right? So if you change the y range, might get a better sense for what's going on. Although it seems like when you get to 1 over 10,
the differences are...
Or even 1 over 3, I mean, the differences don't seem to be all that.
Yeah.
It's very close.
Mm-hmm.
And I think maybe these cases here will be more relevant than the really small cases, but I wanted to prove it anyway.
Yeah.
So what is the, is there some sense on what the right, whether this experiment makes sense to say each item has all the, has let's say sizes of less than 1/20th of the replica space, is that reasonable?
1/20th is reasonable, at least in my view, but what, I think this figure gives a misleading view because we are looking at a very simpler version of the problem.
This is just to look at compare between the various bin packing ones to see if there's some sense of which is the most practical.
So I guess that, as you said, all the offline ones
do better.
Then we compare several versions of SLC map. The things that the probability function is in the paper is different than the probability function in the code. So I didn't know which one to use. And I was hoping that the one in the code would be better, because in the code, and it did better than the one in the paper. So the SLC map from paper algorithms and all these to the left, and they were pretty similar. I will change the parameters and the weight. And here in this version of the problem is simplified, so when we look at working set size.
Oh, the y-axis is different here.
Yes.
Higher is...
Yeah, so here we...
It's only 8 disks.
We're comparing the number of disks that it... the average number of disks it kept active per interval.
Okay.
Using 8 disks.
So is this the reason why the graph is missing?
Ricardo is supposed to be here. Ricardo, are you here?
No.
I mean, he sometimes mutes his mic. He's on the phone.
He's back?
Yeah, sorry, I was on mute. Yes.
He's here.
So, here all the pieces are, I mean, all the data is the same, but in more pieces, right? The amount of data is the same.
Yeah. What is the 0.05?
Those are
the relative
weights from your
probability function. So, yeah. But what is each case? Because I see how they change the size of the components.
Yeah, maximum size of each.
But the amount of disks goes down.
Yeah, because I mean, as the size of the components becomes smaller, then you can put more working sets in one bin or in one.
But the total size of all the components added is the same, or
no.
It's also small?
It's also
small.
You have a fixed amount of components.
So there are only 8 items, 8 disks.
How many?
One per host.
One per disk.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Remember it was
one
N
per disk.
Because each disk has its own working set on that.
So we ran 8 experiments with 8 disks because it was relevant, because the experiments in the paper were done with 8 disks and also with 100 disks. As we can see, the efforts not using the probability function from the paper didn't do well, so I just decided to go with the code version. So it was difficult to pick up a winner, but definitely it seems like the larger factor, 0.45, was winning and doing better, but as the size of the maximum size of the items would decrease, it would do pretty bad.
Why do you have 0.45 two times?
0.05, that's the two weights, the same for...
Two weights, one for the load and the other one for the size. Okay, and there was a reason for why you chose them to be the same, or?
Easier to...
Okay. Yeah.
Of course, there are arbitrary choices. I asked him about it. So yeah, one could if this has to go into some paper, clearly we have to do some more experiments.
We
want to
change the factors. Although using the same factor for both on different, it would change the way in which the weight recalibration of the probability changes. So it would still impact, even though the two weights would be the same, it would impact it. We change the value in both. But yeah, I didn't run experiments with different weights for each of the coordinates. And the thing is, if you have the same distribution anyways in these experiments.
Sorry, Mario, could you explain what the probability function is?
Mm-hmm. So
the probability function in the paper is defined as for each disk, which it has a probability function of pi given by a certain weight, and then the minimum size of the minimum weight among all the working sets, the minimum size among all the working sets divided by the size of this particular working set.
Okay.
Plus another weight, which is by these factors.
Mm-hmm.
There is a minimum load of any of the working sets divided by the load of this one.
So that's the probability that a disk is going to be spun down at any given time.
Mm-hmm.
If the
how it's in the paper?
That's in the paper. I mean, the paper has power and our disk ratio. In the code, it's different. The code is pi 1 minus factor, one of those factors, times divided by the size. Minus another weight divided by the load minus another
the load of the disk. I would assume
the expected average load in the interval. Minus another weight divided by the miss number of misses and no power. Here comes also misses. The same structure and power.
Mm.
And the code only considers size, load, and number of places, and has this different probability formula.
Yeah. So, of course, the paper one does better, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or the one the code does better.
The code is better.
And the code makes less sense to me.
Yeah.
And also does your calibration once you allocate a replica. You change this probability.
You start to multiply this probability.
In the code, it's a little bit different. It will be 1 minus pi times 1 minus pa. Instead of pi minus pa, you're changing the probability of
And then aren't these somewhat complement to each other?
No.
A little bit off, I mean, but you know, you can see some correspondence there. The load and the size are in the denominator,
mm-hmm.
and then the maximum load is assumed to be some constant, so all of that gets absorbed in that weight that you have. So there's some correspondence, but then you really are looking at it as probabilities, you're multiplying them, so you're doing lots of operations,
mm-hmm.
and in that sense, it's not kosher.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when you multiply, you should be multiplying probabilities. But then, I think Mario pointed out that these numbers are all between 0 and 1, so when you multiply, you're still going to be between 0 and 1, fortunately. But it's not a probability anymore, it's some other funny measure of all these factors. So it's something reasonable, but it's not clear if it can be, if we can pinpoint it as something, as a probability measure.
Yeah, I think we should run this by Akshat and see what he thinks, because at least I got the sense that it all makes, you know, it all makes sense for him in his mind.
No, I think that it makes sense in the sense that as your size increases, you want that probability to be lower. As your load increases, you want that probability to be lower. So in that sense, that sort of proportionality is there.
No, I'm saying that it made perfect sense to him in his mind, at least when we were talking about this. I had a lot of questions too when we were going through these equations. Then after a while I gave up because I just couldn't get through to what he was saying. But it would be, maybe you would be able to get through to what he's saying.
Good try.
Yeah.
No, but I think one of the points that's being made here is that you have to pick those weights for the inputs, and which means that if your situation changes or if you're going to port this program to another to some other system, you have to go and figure out those parameters again.
Mm-hmm.
Or if your system load and things change again, then you may have to retune those parameters,
mm-hmm.
and that's not particularly healthy.
Mm-hmm.
There is no reasonable way to pick those weights.
but it seems that it has correspondence between how much weight and how
correct
the size.
Yeah. So that's the point that's being made. So
right,
if you change those, that the performance changes dramatically. However, there is no reasonable way to pick those metrics.
So what then would be I just decided SRT map 0.45 is the winner, and I cannot still worry about this distribution anymore because I thought that this would be more real 1/3, 1/4, 1/4, 1/4 as a distribution used for this presentation than 1/20. I thought the working stress wouldn't be that small. Because in the SRTMAP paper, it says that on average, they were able to turn off about 4.33 servers per interval. And it seemed like it would be around this area, the size of the working sets. So I thought maybe 1/3, 1/3 would be the closest thing to real. And 1/20 is too small. So I picked SRTMAP with a factor 0.35.
Well, if it's 1/20, you can just make a copy of everything on every disk. And so it's really too trivial after all. If you're doing only 8 disks, and if each of them is only 1/20 at roughly, then you can just make a copy of everything everywhere. It doesn't make sense. So it's only interesting when the size is less than 1/10.
And in SRTMAP, the SRTMAP function with 8 disks, and the disks are very small, it did pretty well. But with 100 disks and the working sets pretty small, it varied very much. And with these factors, it did really bad because starvation issues arised. But of course, in the actual code, the maximum size capacity, load capacity, and the factors are in such a way that this cannot happen. That's going back to that it's not really described how it makes that impossible. Well, then I think there's a SRTMAP champion, I guess, 0.45 is factor and compared it to vector packing algorithms. Yeah, well, this is where I experienced with 8 disks, and all the vector packing algorithms get better than SRTMAP. I tried to...
Can you explain exactly how SRTMAP was modified for this experiment?
SRTMAP?
Yeah.
We only worried about working for size and load for vector packing and for SRTMAP. So the number of meshes we didn't take into account or the power consumption.
Okay.
One question for the 100 disks. It looks like they all do work, do perform badly, because 120 should be 5 disks, right? In the 100 disks.
Here?
Yes, 120. All of them should fit around 5 disks, right?
No. Well, some of these do around 5 disks.
10, so it's this
with smaller factor look pretty well.
So it's less than 10, yeah, maybe 7 or 8. So that's pretty reasonable.
Are these with the largest factor algorithms are the ones that actually issue for starvation of working sets in the replica allocation phase, which causes the last performance. But for example, here with the 110, which is pretty small, they all did pretty well. A little bit more than 10 is 400 open search. In vector packing, we can see SRTMAP did better. I mean, the vector packing algorithms did better than SRTMAP. I didn't believe it. I mean, I tried to really go over it and see why would SRTMAP not do as well. I tried to make it better.
You could try different weights, for instance, and see what happens.
That's what I was trying to do here, but
I really don't understand what does mean maximum size of each component, because if it's really in each component that's the maximum,
yeah,
it should be easy to find 5 20 that fit in one bin, right?
Yeah.
And that's this 8 disks, so this one bin. So it does
pretty well. Yeah, but I don't know why they should say anything that is more than one.
Because of the load. If the load is more than what one disk can handle, then you need more than one disk.
No, but if every component is less than 1/20th, why should anything?
I thought this was only the size. This was not the load.
Oh, it's only size.
Size and load.
Is it size and load?
Oh,
it's size and load.
If there is size and load, why should anything go over one?
That's my.
That's a valid question.
Oh,
well, I think the...
Or even for 1/10th, for
the vector fucking algorithm... The vector fucking algorithms do 1.
Some that have gone average is a little bit more than 1.
Yes.
They should all be flat at 1.
That question didn't arise, but...
So was it just uniform distribution?
Yes.
At 1/20th? Because then it's not a maximum size.
Uniform distribution from 1 to 1.
Oh, that's nice. And that's for both size and load, right?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe something is wrong, because for sure with your 8 items, each of size 1/20th, all of them should fit in one bin anyway.
The question didn't arise to me, so, and I don't know how to...
What yeah, that's why I was also asking for the 100, because it looks too much. It's 5, 6, 6, 5.
But you allow multiple replicas, right? You allow multiple replicas.
Oh, yeah.
But even so, I mean, one bin will have all the replicas. And you have enough space for all of them.
Well, this is an exciting bin packing. I mean, the problem is different. I mean, you can just say, well, they all fit, so it should be one. The problem has some certain differences in the additional constraints of the virtual machine resource allocation problem.
But as I see, if every component has 120 or less, mm-hmm. should be fit 20 of them
right.
easily.
Mm-hmm. But these algorithms.
An
optimal algorithm will put an optimal algorithm will put more than one bin, but these algorithms are the best they do. Have their own ways.
No, but regardless of what algorithm, I mean, you can look at any of those algorithms, first fit, best fit, they will all put it in the same bin.
Yeah, they should.
Yeah.
As long as they fit, they should just put it in there.
Mm. And they should fit.
And they
probably there is a problem with your distribution.
But
if you increase capacity, probably you don't fit. Why don't you? So the thing is that you have 8 items that you want to distribute to 8 disks.
Okay.
But those 8 items use at most 1/20th of each dimension.
Oh, of each dimension. Of both. I see. Okay.
But it's worth checking on. It's possible that there is a bug there.
So those are your winners?
Those are your winners?
Yep.
Online I go.
That's what I'm not just pretty bad in the small distribution because I picked 0.45 factor, which does pretty bad in the small distribution because I thought, well, maybe picking something that would work better in these distributions.
Yeah, but there might be a bug which I want to check out.
There might be bugs.
Yeah.
Any bit of code. And try to check for the code. Or
I mean, this one is a...
No, I think this
one
is obvious bug to address.
Yeah. I spent most of my energy in the SRC map code because he was the loser. I didn't work much in the vector packing algorithms. Because they were doing pretty well, and why would I make it better? I'm trying to improve SRC map. But yeah, I'll definitely go over that code and see why this. Well, for future work, we want to try some more real data sets and maybe some relevant distributions of working set sizes on those. And maybe attack the problem of where you allow certain kind of replica reallocation within minor intervals.
well, for discussion, we have maybe the ways that we address the weaknesses of SLC map. And this respective packing based algorithms, they have certain performance guarantees, approximation guarantees. In the experiments, the vector packing based algorithms perform better than SLC map. And scalability, also as the number of items increase, the experiments, vector packing algorithms get better. And if they have worst case performance guarantees, they're asymptotic performance guarantees. As the number of items increase, you will expect they to have the same guarantees. And then for discussion, we will discuss the problems into general or simplified. So what can we add to? That's about it.
So, yeah, I think this is a really good overview of what you did. It's, certainly, I mean, the vector packing approach seems interesting. It has good properties, right, which can be utilized. In terms of whether you generalized the problem too much, I think there are, the last version of the problem is still real. So I won't worry about, you know, whether you're unnecessarily making the problem complicated, right? And
mostly I worry about maybe making the problem too simple.
The simpler are on the
experiments.
Size being the same for the disks and
the
capacity. So it's a homogeneous setup. Do we need to worry about doing heterogeneous setups for the experiments?
Right, your data, yes, was with homogeneous setup, but earlier you presented material where
those problem formulations.
The problem formulations were fairly general and could capture very realistic scenarios. And even the simpler versions of the problem, I think, are also relevant. I mean, as we used a fairly simple version of the problem in SRC map, and that was real too in its own setting, right? And those kinds of settings are also common in enterprise. But at the same time, like Jorge was mentioning earlier, storage systems are becoming more heterogeneous.
Mm.
So which means you have to worry about the more complicated versions of the problem going into the future. Right? I'm more interested in terms of theory work. Where can this go to become publishable? Yes, that's the question I'm interested in.
Well, unless we come up with some new approximation algorithms, the vector packing itself, well, the only way to take it along algorithms line direction is to come up with new approximation algorithms.
Mm.
Of course, there's now a lot of interest in experimental algorithms. Doing reasonable experiments with existing algorithms and engineering good solutions so that they perform better. So there are at least three good conferences, and so one of them we're actually targeting for this work, because most of the work is, we have some theoretical results, but it's mostly experimental work. So I think it would make a good algorithms experiments paper. Now most algorithms conferences have both the theoretical component and the experimental component. So this will fit in well there. What needs to be seen is whether it makes sense to your community. Otherwise, this work is only interesting to that extent.
I mean, the results of the theory formulations and so on can possibly be utilized. But if your question is, can we publish this in a systems conference? I think the answer to that is really I don't know. I mean, first of all,
no, if for instance the experiments were beefed up and we show an improvement over the existing SRC map performance, is this interesting to the storage community or not?
I think it could be.
I think that probably you have to take into account multiple measurements of performance, not just number of disks.
Right, so there, some of the obvious questions, for instance, is what kind of performance implications of a system like this, which would mean building the actual system, measuring the performance and latency impact and things of that kind, right? Which could be done, of course, but
that's what I meant by beefing up the experiment.
Right. So it's kind of difficult to answer that question because both yes and no, and yes because if the results are substantially better, although the problem is well defined, the framework is defined by a previous paper, some community might still take it, but I've seen these days the system, the follow-up work on existing systems not getting all that much attention, at least in the systems community, and that's why I'm kind of a little guarded about saying yes, let's go for it.
So what about something like Sigmetrix?
Something like Sigmetrix may be interesting.
It's more like a statistics paper.
Modeling and performance evaluation. Yeah. See, that's a very good idea. I think a Sigmetrix submission might be a better target than systems conference or something like this. Right. I think, first of all, when we published the SRC map work, we had to sort of fight through a lot of arguments.
Saying that working sets are enough,
right? Right, yeah, saying that working sets are enough, not because people said, okay, there is not enough stability, but there was one group of people who said that, you know, for foreground workloads, having a miss that takes, a few seconds is unacceptable,
yeah.
Right? So there was that set of people who questioned even the basic formulation of the problem in the way we did it, right? So yeah, which goes back to the working set assumption.
So that's fine.
I think those are the kinds of things that we have to additionally address in a follow-up paper.
So if it's not working set, what is an appropriate solution? So my question is, if there is an approach, we can formalize it, we can model it theoretically, and then approach it. Here the assumption was that that model was reasonable. If we assume that model was reasonable, then here is a problem formula. Here is a theoretical formulation, and here is a way to approach it.
Right.
And here is evidence that this theoretical approach will lead to reasonable solutions, probably better than anything that exists currently.
Mm-hmm.
That's really what this is. So if the initial assumptions are wrong, then give us a new set of assumptions, and we'll try to formulate it and see.
I'm not necessarily saying that the initial assumptions are wrong. I'm saying that there will be a subset of the community that are just on principle,
yeah,
they will oppose this thing. But then, you know, the SRC map work did get published, which means there was a substantial amount of support as well.
Yeah.
And even at the conference, no one was outrightly rejecting,
jumping on your,
on this. But what I'm saying is that whenever we have assumptions built into the work, we'll have to work against those. And I think, I mean, the way to address the working set stability question is to just be say that, okay, we can be more conservative in the choice of the working set, so that or model the impact of mistakes.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
that is
definitely part of, you can say that it's part of the objective function, which we haven't really spelled out in all its detail.
Right. So we could say all that, and we could possibly send it to a systems conference, but once again, I think it will be a harder sell in a systems conference because just because the community is kind of, they're sort of now tuned to ideas that are completely new, right? So even problems that are completely new, right? And that's one of the issues, I think, and that makes me a little bit concerned about sending it to a systems conference, like FAST, for instance. Because I know that community all too well, right? It's going to be hard to push it to
the community, right?
Right. So something like Sigmetrics, I think, is probably going to be more appropriate because there the focus is on performance evaluation, right, and modeling. So that to me seems to make more sense. Sigmetrics,
but they may want very statistical issues like stock distributions and
not necessarily. Not all favors in Sigmetrics.
Yeah. I mean, if we need to go in that direction, maybe we should. I mean, maybe there is some value in doing that. So that's one possibility. Let's say that Sigmetrics is one possibility.
Yeah.
If we go the algorithms route, you say that there are some
algorithms
other
for sure, we're going to pursue that. There is no question about it. I know that this, as you said, the Microsoft paper was published in the last year's algorithm conference. So they would I'm not sure where it would get published, but it would definitely be a competitive paper.
The Microsoft paper, did it have a new algorithm or you just did an
analysis? No, comparison. They have some, I mean, even here there are some variations that are new that weren't there before.
Didn't apply any
but
they just ran experiments.
There are lots of algorithms experiments paper where they, for instance, compare every possible network flow algorithm or minimum spanning tree algorithm for very specific applications.
So one of the points maybe we should go back to is the fact that the hardest version of the problem is still relevant. And if we kind of focus or at least some part of our energy into the hardest version of the problem and solving that in a practical way, that might be interesting. Because we're saying that, okay, all of these simpler versions of the problem, they're still very hard, but then there are all this wealth of approximation algorithms that already exist. But maybe what I'm hearing is that for the hardest version of the problem, there's not a lot of work out there yet.
That's correct.
And we're saying that the hardest version of the problem is actually a relevant problem.
No question about it. I think that, the way you should see this is that this is sort of a first step. Saying, if we simplify the problem enough, here's a way to approach it, and the model has enough generality to it that you can take on these additional complications. So definitely that can be addressed. He's just spent enough time to do these experiments in order to at least convince you that this approach is meaningful, has promise, and is probably better than other existing ones. That's the way to see this current in the current presentation. Where to take it from here is what we should collectively decide.
So in that regard, I'm saying that maybe the novelty would come in tackling the hardest version of the problem in a substantial way and say that. Okay, existing work does not adequately address that. But maybe the hardest version of the problem is hardest for a reason.
I think SRC map takes on the most complex version. It allows all these things to vary. All it changes is the probability. And then the rest of the algorithm is consistent. Here, that's not quite true here. I mean, we have lots of possible algorithms that we can use and we can compare, blah, blah, blah. But overall, even within the simplest case, what it shows is that it makes sense to try these vector packing approaches.
So what we need is a storyline, right? Is that there is...
So the storyline is simply that this problem can be formulated in a very precise manner as an ILP, if you want to think about it that way, or as an optimization problem. and that's what was attempted. And of course, you can, depending on what your assumptions are, you can sort of make it more and more complex. So let's just assume the most complex version, that's fine, but it's still an optimization problem. And there are ways to use standard well-known algorithms to do it, and those algorithms have performance guarantees. Here performance means approximation guarantees. So they will guarantee that they will use only twice the number of, or 2.44 number of disks than what an optimal algorithm would do. Again, those results are not true for the most general version. They're true for some slightly simplified questions. So what we can do is start from there and say, here are some additional complications for which we may or may not have good results, but we can use those approaches, modify them, and show that the experiments prove them to be reasonable. That's really the approach that we intend to take for the algorithms paper. The question is, what would you like to do with this for this replica placement problem?
Mm-hmm. Right. So, yeah, the story I sort of had in mind similar, except that I would sort of go in the reverse way, which is to say that...
Yeah, my story was for the algorithms community,
right.
So we need to come up with a similar story for the storage community.
Right. For the storage, I'm not quite sure, but I think for the... For the Sigmatics community, we could have a story along the lines that, okay, here is a problem, which is a real problem, right? And if you want to model it as an algorithmic problem, this is what it looks like, right? And it turns out that simpler versions of the problem have established approximation algorithms, but the real problem is this harder version, which is probably not yet solved or it doesn't have very good solutions, so we work on that. I'm not sure if that would require us to...
Yeah, that looks too much like the algorithms version that I talked about, so then we can't really take the same paper and present it.
For the Sigmatics, there is another possibility, which is, okay, here are different variants of the problem, here are different solutions to each of these variants. We ran all these experiments, and here is all the data, and so and there are some conclusions, which is also interesting, which is kind of going along the lines that Mario went in his presentation today. Right, that could work for Sigmatics.
Although the experiments we would have to take into account also throughput, like other performance evaluations, as opposed to just power.
Possibly.
I mean, I don't have a lot of work done in that.
Yeah, I mean, running real experiments, not necessarily. I mean, Sigmatrics, sometimes it, you know, or a lot of times, if you look at Sigmatrics proceedings, very little of the papers have report results from real systems. A lot of that is simulation, like the way you're doing it. But it's just that very detailed simulation and a very comprehensive set of experiments that they do. So the challenge there is to convince people that your simulations are good, that you've covered all the different cases, and that you have enough, you've explored the problem broadly and deeply enough that whatever you have in the end is useful.
I should definitely go to that conference and look at some papers.
Yeah,
look at some
papers. Next deadline is in November, so that gives us a good window of introducing the paper. So yeah, it's possible that maybe we can just keep the vector packing stuff, but then that's already been published in the algorithms community, so it's not clear that it'll fly well. Maybe there are a few new algorithms, but that could be one an approach to the algorithms community. The Sigmatrics community could be comparing it to SRC map and
comparing a whole bunch of different approaches, like,
and
so just like what you did, you can follow up on this direction for Sigmatrics.
But the other question, I guess, did you have a future directions slide, or is that all you?
Yeah, I will talk to you.
So a couple of things here. First of all, if working set is, if there's somebody there who says working set is, shouldn't be used for all these configurations. Is there any other way to then answer them?
Well, there are, for fine-grained energy proportionality, there are people who are doing full volume replication, right? I mean, you presented the rabbit,
mm-hmm.
the rabbit paper, and there was some other paper.
Mm-hmm.
Sierra.
Sierra, yes.
Right, so from
there was some more.
Right, so those are, that's the alternative, but they do not go after fine-grained energy proportionality. But of course, they have all the data available all the time, so you don't need any disk spin-up for any of the data for responsiveness. So that's the alternative that people have been talking about.
So assuming those experiments are correct, some of the improvements over even SRC map for say 100 disks is sometimes 20, 30, 40% improvement. Isn't that something of interest
to the storage community?
Yeah.
It's of interest.
I think to see new approaches is what you're saying.
Yeah, I think
this would be seen as an incremental improvement over SRC map, and therefore.
Yeah, and that I haven't seen any such paper,
follow-up papers.
Yeah,
which
not that I've not seen them submitted, but
this would be seen as a tweaking of the gist of the earlier work.
Yeah. And that I'm not saying that it cannot get published. Much harder to get something like that. You'll have to work like twice or thrice as hard making the paper, you know,
very different from the
very previous. Different and yeah, exactly. So, but I like Jorge's suggestion, which is symmetric. I think we should, I mean, given the direction that you're already taking, it, symmetrics is a more appropriate menu. Yeah. Just look at some papers. I mean, look through last couple of years' proceedings and see, you know, a couple of papers at least will be interesting to you. And read them and just get a sense for what kind of work gets published there. Okay. So, yeah, we should follow up our email and maybe meet at some point.
Well, it's worth pointing out that there are some really good versions of the problem for, say, data movement, if you allow data movement.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, what you want to do is, let's say you have one packet, right? You know, we look at this as a vector packing problem. So let's say you have one layer, one set of, you decide this vector goes here, this vector goes there, and so on. Now, what you want to do is some of the loads have changed in your next interval, and you want to reallocate them so that your power consumption is again reasonable, is again as low as possible. But you want it in such a way that the amount of movements that you do is minimized. So now you're not just trying to minimize the power consumption, but you're also minimizing the amount of data movements. So that makes the problem very different, quite interesting, probably quite hard.
Yeah.
So the question is, does that problem have any interest? That would make it quite different from SRC map, which doesn't allow any data movements. But then it will raise other objections, saying data movement is just too crazy.
Mm.
So we have no way of judging whether that's a reasonable model or not. We need some suggestions as to whether we should spend energy on such a version of the problem or not.
I think it's worth some thought. I mean, we should think about.
So there, the idea is doing the major intervals. They'll do, you know, bin packing. They'll do some really good bin packing. And then, so now all the replicas have been assigned to the right disk. Then in the minor intervals, actually, you know, a few of these loads have changed. Now we'll move a few things here and there in such a way that the movements are the smallest possible, yet the number of disks is this small.
Yeah.
And
well, the issue there is that copying entire working sets can itself take a fair amount of time.
Yeah, yeah. So that's why I'm asking. I understand that much. So that's why is it even worth pursuing such a problem or because I was this version of the data movement.
Right.
Approach.
Right. Yeah, I would not go there. I think we should explore the current direction a little bit more before we tackle this this modification. I think it's worth looking at it, but later. And we should go back to it once we have a good handle on the current approach A, right?
Mm-hmm.
Also to separate out the impact of the major changes versus the minor changes, right? One of the things I pointed out earlier, and all these different parameter combinations for SRC map, how now understanding them better and those kinds of questions. At least for segmented, we should not go in that direction. Maybe after we do a good segmented submission, we may create some additional insight which might say, okay, let's look at approach B. And because that, you know, a lot of our problems could be solved if we allowed this data movement or a small amount of data movement. We might have a better sense for how to set up the data movement as well, once we explore this sufficiently.
So then for this, for such a paper, I heard two things. One is to figure out the right parameters for SRC map.
Yeah, explore the parameter space of SRC map, major versus minor change impact, right? And just continue along this direction that you have as you go towards increasingly complex problem versions. Maybe you can pick out one sigmetrics paper that you see does something along these lines. Could be maybe not even storage, could be anything else, right? But where they comprehensively look at a problem, all different kinds of solutions, and or you know maybe take an incremental view of the problem itself, making it more and more complex and looking at how the solution applies or doesn't apply. And we could then see what this community is used to. But I think that, you know, for something like this, sigmetrics is a good choice. Okay, so let's follow up over email.
Okay.
So next week, I guess we are doing two papers, right, over here?
Oh, yeah, I didn't show anything to them.
Yeah.
You're doing two papers.
No, just.
So we're gonna do the M each and the thing.